Welcome to the Hemophilia edition of Rare Disease Advisor's Rare Care Podcast, offering unique perspectives from researchers, clinicians, and influencers from the hemophilia community.
Hello, this is Larry Luxner, Senior Correspondent with Rare Disease Advisor. We're at the 2022 NORD Summit in Washington, D.C. today, talking with Darlene Shelton, founder and president of Danny's Dose Alliance in Dexter, Missouri. This nonprofit's mission is to change current outdated emergency treatment protocols that affect the proper care of special needs medical patients. Thank you for being with us today, Darlene.
Thank you for having me.
Tell us about Danny, about hemophilia, and about your organization.
So Danny is my grandson. He was the very first grandchild that we had. And at 7 days old, he had a bruise on his chest, the first bruise. 2 days later, he had a second bruise. 3 days after that, he had a third bruise. And as a grandmother, I knew in my heart that something was wrong, but we didn't know what. It took 11 months with multiple bruising, worse bruising, as he became more mobile and playing and things. And it really resulted in a major mouth bleed that resulted in his diagnosis of severe hemophilia B.
And that was at 11 months of age?
Yes.
So it took 11 months until you all figured out what was wrong?
Yes.
And then, so how did you start the organization and why?
At the time when he was diagnosed, he was, of course, a chunky little boy, and the medication is through IV. So we had a home health nurse that came to do his regular twice weekly infusions. And we're a family that just thinks outside of the box. And so we, of course, started thinking about emergency care. If there was an automobile accident, or if he just got hurt and the home health nurse couldn't get there, we weren't able to treat him yet. We didn't know how to do IVs on a baby. And of course the doctor says, oh, you just call 911. So, okay, fine. So we knew you're gonna have to have the dose that's just his emergency dose. We had that all packed together, and we had a backpack with a medical symbol. And we even got orders from the physician, because I remember saying, well, we can't just write a note ourselves. That wouldn't give them the information they need properly. So we got orders from the physician. So we thought in an emergency that Danny would be protected, until late 2014, when we found out from a friend who has hemophilia, an adult that had a car wreck, broke his right wrist and hit his head, so he couldn't self-infuse. He called 911. They came. He had his clotting factor there. In the original packaging, he was still coherent. He was telling them what his dosage was. And they said, sir, we cannot give you that medication because it's not on our ambulance.
According to your website, it says, we were informed that although we had medical alert on his headrest and car seat with his factor back attached to it with medical orders and dosing, the paramedics or ER doctors were not allowed to give it due to conflicting protocols and liability fears. So basically, they were afraid of getting sued.
Yes.
Can you explain that?
It's really the fear of the unknown. It's a lack of education. So there's more of a fear that, oh, I don't know this medicine, so I shouldn't give it. Rather than the real fear should be, if I don't give this medication, this patient will be harmed. So that's one of the things we've raised awareness to, is trying your best and treating is the best thing for the patient. Doing nothing will absolutely result in harm.
So is that how you started your organization?
That is how we started.
That was the catalyst for Danny's
Dose?
Yes,
it was.
But at that time, no state, no federal law existed to mandate, to allow these people, these professionals who are not doctors, to give medication that they didn't actually get themselves. Is that right?
Correct. So at that point, old existing protocols, and actually they're still there, state, in layman's terms, if it's not on the ambulance, they can't give it. Except we've made some changes.
What about the ER?
The ER has the same, it's such a liability fear, because they're so afraid of a patient bringing in the medication, and from the conversations we've had, what if they didn't store it correctly? What if it's tampered with? But of course, you have it in the original packaging, unopened, untouched.
Or what if it's not refrigerated?
And not every medicine has to be refrigerated.
Doesn't that have to be?
Not necessarily, no. Depends on how long you're keeping it at your house. When I've been in these meetings, it's like I tell them, families take care of that medication. It's your lifeline. You make sure that medication's taken care of, because It is what saves your loved one. It's not something you play around with. So when they walk in the door with that medication, it's going to be good medication, and it's very expensive. You can't just flippantly not take care of this medicine that can easily cost $50,000 and up per month.
$50,000 per month?
Yes, for young people.
Your website refers to March 2nd, 2015, when local news TV station KFVS 12 aired a story followed by Lobby Day. What's Lobby Day, and how did this story go nationwide?
Okay, Lobby Day is an organized day that the Hemophilia Association in a state picks a day and brings in all of the families. So you go to your state capitol and meet your legislators, and if you have a current bill, then you actually advocate for that bill.
And so according to your site here, it says you were able to get legislation passed in Missouri and Minnesota with nationwide goals. What does that legislation state?
The legislation actually clarifies that a paramedic may administer patient-carried specialty meds. And we were very careful to leave out the words life-saving, because these medications still need to be administered even if you don't think it's life and death. A muscle bleed is horrendous. And then there's other conditions that affect different body functions.
But it may not kill you.
Oh, your medication's not going to kill you.
No, but no. Not taking the medication might, right?
Correct.
So if you say life-saving, that kind of narrows it down, right?
Right. So we didn't want to add that. So specialty medications, and I should say prescribed specialty medications. Right. So this is not going to be an over-the-counter medication in a pill bottle in a purse.
Right.
These are specialty medications prescribed to the patient for their rare or chronic condition.
Okay, I understand. You did say something about protecting 28 million Americans. How do you arrive at that number?
We're 7 years old now,
mm-hmm.
and we now know of approximately 40 conditions that require specialized care. 16 of those conditions require the patients to carry their own specialty medications. So all total, based on numbers from like the NIH and the CDC, those 40 conditions affect over 28 million Americans.
And out of the 28 million, how much does hemophilia account for?
Hemophilia A and B together, about 52,000.
Of the 28 million?
Yes.
So a tiny fraction?
Yes.
Interesting. What other states have passed laws or may soon pass laws similar to yours?
Arkansas passed their legislation in 2021, and Louisiana did a state scope of practice change. And we recently learned Colorado has done a state scope of practice change, but I can't take credit for that.
What about on the national level?
We are just starting to work on a federal bill. We had started on that before COVID, and of course, COVID shut everybody down.
Right.
So we are, I kind of say, stirring those coals again. Another thing I am very pleased about, our goals from the beginning have been to have disease-specific, nationally recognized treatment guidelines with education. And as of last week, when we attended EMS World, we were able to make some great connections, and we'll be working on our first 5 conditions in 2023.
You mentioned earlier you were giving a demonstration of this specialized yellow packaging for medication. Can you talk about that?
Okay, so it's actually for your emergency orders. So I created a headrest cover. It's very washable, a cotton polyester that I knew could be washed easily. So it goes on the headrest, it has a drawstring to make it stay, and then it has a pocket that holds those emergency orders. Because what we did in Missouri is, along with allowing the paramedics to administer patient-carried meds, now what they need is orders. A paramedic can only act upon the orders of a physician. And the person who knows you best as the patient is your specialist. So we teach our families that they need to get emergency orders from their specialist, and then the paramedics are now able to treat based on those orders. So you have to have them available, readily available. What better place than a pocket on the headrest of the car? Because when they come on the scene, they're always going to look in the face of the patient. Your headrest is going to be right behind you. They are going to see this bright yellow headrest cover.
Oh, interesting. And so have you distributed this?
Yes, we sell them off of our website. and try to keep them as absolutely cheap as possible because we want families to have them.
Wonderful. Talk, if you would, just a bit about treatment options for hemophilia. It seems that there are a lot of therapies on the horizon, including gene therapy. How hopeful are you that treatments or even a cure might be on the horizon?
Actually, we are very hopeful. We started following the gene therapy when Danny was 5. I remember that. It had started over in Europe, the very first one. And we started just watching and reading and trying to connect with some of the physicians that are involved in the testing. And we are very hopeful. We are following. Now we've got 3-4 more companies working on gene therapy. It's a AAV vector that they use to inject. We also know that at this point, Danny is young. That means his immune system is still high. So, and he knows this, that he'll wait till he's probably approximately 20 to 22. So the immune system starts waning just a little because it's a one-shot deal. If your immune system recognizes that virus, because that's how it's loaded, then it creates antibodies against the virus, you don't have another chance.
This is the problem with Duchenne muscular dystrophy, exactly.
Yes.
And with a few other diseases as well.
Yes. And this may make some of the companies unhappy that I say this, but I personally do not agree with some of the companies that are doing immune suppressants in order to force the gene therapy to work so that the body won't recognize the virus. Just me personally, I don't agree with that because I feel like you're now putting them at risk in another area by giving immune suppressants.
Right, because then that opens up a possibility of infection to all kinds of diseases that you might otherwise not get.
Right.
How difficult was COVID for you and your son?
COVID is scary because I think everybody probably heard about the odd clotting issues that happened with some people. And we actually know some people that have had some irregular clotting issues either from having COVID or having COVID and getting the vaccine very close together that caused some clotting issues in them. And we've, as a family, have watched that very closely.
But you all got vaccinated.
The kids are all vaccinated, but also being very cautious and staying away from others and doing like the at-home test kits to make sure there was no COVID so that there really wasn't a mix of COVID and the vaccine, because it's something to watch.
Great. Is there anything else you'd like to add?
Basically, to all the families out there that hear this, one of the very most important things that families need to do, they have a huge role to play in their own protection. They must go meet with their local EMS service and say, hey, I live in your area and our family has this condition, and ask for a treatment plan. Those are the key words, a treatment plan. So that means that everybody's going to get together, you're going to have meetings, they're going to contact your specialist, and they're going to develop a plan of action for when an emergency happens and know exactly who your doctor is, know exactly the best emergency room to go to. It's going to involve school and your school nurse, and if any permissions need to be given prior, that can already be done. Then the day that something happens, everybody's prepared and things won't go south.
Thank you. Thanks for talking with us, Darlene. This is Larry Luxner for Rare Disease Advisor. Thank you for listening.
Be sure to follow the latest news, perspectives, and clinical resources on rare diseases at rarediseaseadvisor.com. Thank you for listening.